I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics' viral tubing mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS. .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
All right, Madigan.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing really well right now. I feel like we just had a really, like, upbeat, chatty, great conversation. And then we both were like, okay, let's get started. And we're like, oh, gosh, we really got to bring it down a little bit. But it's always lovely to talk with you and catch up with you.
Yeah, it's good to have check-ins, you know, and be able to catch up, especially since we haven't seen each other IRL in over a year. And I like that we can find moments of joy because life is really heavy right now.
Yeah.
Again, always. And to be quite honest with you, I'm very exhausted and I don't like feeling this way. I'm really to the point where I have posted some things on my timeline on Instagram and stuff like that. But like, I'm so frustrated and disappointed that we're here again. Mm-hmm. The cycle is the same every fucking time. We just had this conversation when it came to mass shootings. And, you know, we're having the same conversation when it comes to police violence against Black people or people of color. And I'm just tired. After last summer, I think, you know, we all gave our all, you and I, definitely. And I allowed myself, despite the number of times that I said, like, I can't really have a lot of hope for this. I did also say, oh, but this time it does feel different. And it's not. And it's never different. And, like, I don't even really want to post about it anymore because I almost feel like when I post or when I say things or when I make Facebook statuses about my own experience, it gives people this like permission to be passive in that they can just come by and like the post or repost whatever I posted and move about their day and not think about it anymore. And like, why? You know,
I think that's a really great point. But I also hear a lot of something that you talk about, which is emotional labor.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that needs to be taken off the shoulders of the people of color in this country. I think that, you know, it was Amari actually that posted something, our friend Amari posted on Facebook, something about, you know, if you are a white ally and you're posting something on social media that's getting heat from people, don't rely on your friends who are black or, you know, of another ethnicity to fight that fight for you. It's not their responsibility. You know, you have to step in and also be educated enough to back up what you're posting. And I think that's a really, really good point, because we can't keep expecting the people who are being hurt to repeatedly re-traumatize themselves and bring up emotions in themselves for the sake of trying to get white people to listen.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of that post, funny you bring that post up, is really the thing that made me say, you know what, I think I'm done for a little while. And it's because I know exactly, she texted me a screenshot of the situation that made her make that post. And it was because there is a white woman from back where we're from who posted something that was like an image of a policeman sitting next to a little black girl, and he was saying, what do you want to be when you grow up? And she said, alive. And so there was a white policeman who got on that post and basically gave her shit for it. And Mari stepped in and pushed back, and then he pushed back on her. And at the end of the day, the woman who made the post basically backed down from her statement and said, you know, this was an incident. I respect you both. You're a good man. You're a good police officer. And this, I shouldn't have posted this. I shouldn't have made generalizations. And meanwhile, Amari has put all of this emotional labor and energy into defending something
you posted. And you're getting worked up. And that's the thing, is that this isn't like there's no emotion attached to it. Like, you're getting worked up and you're being defensive, and having somebody just completely ignore your existence that you're sharing, like, it's just, it feels icky.
Well, and then to
me,
to have your friend who made this post seemingly as an ally then back down from their statement and walk away to the point where she actually deleted the post. Yes, and so that's who Amari was talking to when she made that post, and that's what made me think, like, you know what? Because it's easy. It gets very easy for people. And I understand it as somebody who has people in my family who have opposing viewpoints, as somebody who is non-confrontational and doesn't want to deal with that. It is hard to want to go up against people, but you have to. If you're brave enough to make the post, you're brave enough to back it up. And you should, for the sake of your friends of color, okay? Like, they don't have the option to just be performative in their activism. They're living it. So you need to back it up, okay?
And if you're going, and the other thing to that too is, if you're going to be posting it, you should have the knowledge and education behind it to be able to defend what you're posting. You know what I mean? So that's the other thing. It's like, obviously, it sounds like this woman was trying to be supportive, but wasn't willing to actually put the time into the reasons why she should post that to be able to defend it. You know, it's just a lot of it is just, it's a lot of ignorance, it sounds like.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and it
and
just makes me
kind of mean.
It makes me feel like this is everything that I was worried about last summer, which was that it was all going to be performative because it's easy to hit reshare, repost, do the popular thing, the thing that's trending on Twitter, you know, but it's hard to stand by and have the courage of your convictions and back up your shit in real life and back up your friends in real life. Like, that's, it's hard to do, but do it,
but necessary,
or don't post about it. Okay. Anyway. So of course, all of that big long rant, is coming out of this situation that happened last Sunday, in which a 20-year-old man in Minneapolis, or outside of Minneapolis, was killed by a police officer. It was a 20-year-old man named Dante Wright. So what happened was, a police officer named Kim Potter was training another officer, which, yikes.
I want to talk about that more in a bit after we get into the timeline.
Yes. Yeah. So she's a veteran police officer. She has been on the force for 26 years.
Uh-huh.
So on Sunday afternoon, April 11th, she pulled over Dante for... He called his mother and said that he thought he was being pulled over for having air fresheners hanging from his rear view.
Uh-huh.
But they said that they pulled him over for an expired registration tag on his car.
Right.
They determined during the stop that he had an outstanding warrant, which was a misdemeanor warrant. And this was, it's not even important what it was for, but right. there was an unregistered, he had an unregistered firearm. He ran from the police. And so they, he apparently was supposed to attend Zoom court on April 2nd. Although his lawyer says that he never received the summons, the lawyer didn't. And so he assumes that Dante also did not receive the summons.
Right.
But because he did not go to Zoom court, he had an outstanding warrant.
Right. So there they was, tried to. I heard something somewhere, and I don't know if this is substantiated, but I did hear somewhere that it was sent to the wrong address, that he just never received the information. I don't know if that's true, though.
I read an insider article that said that that was not substantiated, that it was sent to the wrong address, but they do believe that he didn't receive it. So for whatever reason, it either wasn't sent, but the lawyer should have gotten a copy of it.
Yeah.
And since he didn't, they're assuming that that Dante didn't either. So
yeah.
It's not totally clear, but regardless.
None of the details matter. Like nothing that you could possibly do should result in your death at the end of this. You know? Yes. So no matter what kind of crime you've committed, you precisely. Should not be dead at the end of it. So,
and here's the thing. So he did attempt to evade arrest because they tried to take him into custody. But also, I should say, when he got pulled over, he called his mom. So, and this is something that people of color do all the time. They call uh-huh. somebody, they turn on their camera, they do something so that there is some kind of like third party evidence
Good.
Available for any given situation. So that does speak to the fact that he was worried about this situation from the moment he was pulled over. So they tried to take him into custody. He got back into his car or was attempting to get back into his car. Yeah. And that is when the officer, Kim Potter, announced that she was going to use her taser on him. But she pulled out a 9mm handgun, pointed it at Dante, and said, "Taser, taser, taser," before pulling the trigger. And once she pulled the trigger, she said, "Shit, I just shot him." So he managed, after he was shot, to get into his car and was able to make it several blocks before crashing into another car. And he did die at the scene. So there's been a lot made of this, as there should be, that immediately they came out and said this was a mistake. She meant to reach for her taser. She's been a police officer for 26 years.
And the other thing is that, so this is now the former chief, I believe, Tim Gannon, is that his name?
Yes, yeah, he stepped down as well.
Mm-hmm. Whatever the fuck his face's name is, I don't even care. He believed that her use was consistent, what did it say? He also stated that Potter's actions before the shooting were consistent with the department's training on tasers, which I say, I'm sorry, what? Like, up until the moment of shooting, but she wasn't using the proper training for tasers because she used a gun instead of a taser. So why are you, like, that statement didn't make any sense to me.
Well, and also to me, I'm like, do we need to even tase somebody in a situation like this? Like, is that necessary either?
Yeah,
like, I also feel like that's pretty excessive, but... I don't know.
I mean, I've seen many cops holding on to... There was a video that I saw earlier, and I think it was also a Minnesota situation. Fuck you, Minnesota. Of a cop that was, like, holding on to a man inside of his car, and the guy started, like, driving away with the cops still, like, holding on to the car, and that guy, like, made it out alive. It's like, there's other uses of force that can be done without having to use a taser or a gun.
And let's just say that we're okay with the use of a taser right. in a situation like this. Let's
Instead
just
of
say
a gun,
that.
Yes. I will take a taser over a gun.
Of course. However, should cops be allowed to have guns if they can just make mistakes like this where they accidentally pull the wrong thing out?
Should surgeons be able to perform surgery if instead of removing the heart, they remove the liver? Like, I just don't, like,
right,
to me,
any other
you
job,
suck at your job. You should be fired and not do it.
And you could face criminal consequences. Like, you know, there are consequences for your actions, but unfortunately, because of these police unions and these, you know, peace officers'
which she was
bill
the
of rights,
president of. She was the president of the Minneapolis, I think it was the Minneapolis Police Union. I have it somewhere in my notes, but for like a really long time.
I'm
like
going to say right now, she's going to get off.
She knows this shit. Yeah, and she's only getting charged for second degree manslaughter, which is absolutely, at the very, 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 very least, she should have been charged with first degree manslaughter. I looked it up. I tried to determine the differences between the two. At the very, very, very least. First degree manslaughter.
There's, let me tell you, there's almost no chance that she's going to actually be convicted of this.
Does get convicted, it's going to be for a very, very short period of time because of the charge.
Well, because the maximum for that charge is, it's 10 years. I did look at it. It's 10 years. She won't get 10 years.
No, even does if it she's say convicted, the minimum?
It doesn't. Not in the article I read. Okay. But I don't think she's going to get very much time, if any. Like, I just don't see it. But of course, because this happened blocks away from where the Derek Chauvin trial is taking place, protests erupted immediately in Minneapolis.
Can I mention really quick the very bizarre tie-in to Dante Wright and George Floyd? Because I think this is the craziest, saddest coincidence. Mm-hmm. Courtney Ross, George Floyd's girlfriend, was the dean at Thomas Edison High School, where Dante went to school.
Yeah.
He was one of her students.
Well, yeah, I mean, it just goes to show you, like, how pervasive this is. It's just, I don't know, it's incredibly sad. And Dante had a two-year-old, Dante Jr.
Dante Jr.
You know, and listen, I don't want to get into the weeds about this person's past or anything that they may have or may have not done in their life.
Their behavior is irrelevant.
It's
honestly
irrelevant, because I see a lot of people pointing to that. As always, there's a lot of people deflecting and pointing to his criminal record or any of these things.
Okay, but
he's
how about
20,
this? As
he's
a freshman,
20-year-old.
He's a 20-year-old, and as a freshman at Thomas Edison High School, he was also voted class clown. No one's talking about that. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
that's the
right
thing is, like, we cannot look at a person, especially a victim. Why are we only looking at the negative parts of this person's behavior rather than looking at the full picture of this 20-year-old who was a father? He was goofy. Mm-hmm. He was the class clown. He's all of these other things.
And I don't want to say, like, he was a 20-year-old, meaning, like, that would absolve him from responsibility for his actions.
Of course.
It doesn't. But what I mean by that is that he had a lot of years ahead of him to be whatever he wanted to
be. To be alive. Honestly, like, it doesn't, I cannot hammer it home enough that there's nothing that you can do that would make you deserve to be murdered. There's nothing that you can do. So all of these other arguments are irrelevant to me.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, it is not, we've come to this place now where for whatever reason, we think that police are allowed to be judge, jury, and executioner on the spot of any given situation. And that's just not how our justice system should be set up. It's how it should work.
Do you think that the people who have gotten used to that or who are okay with that, I don't really know how to phrase it, do you think it would just be because of the prevalence of it and how used to seeing it we are that we almost just start to get it ingrained in our heads that, like, that's what cops do?
I think it's a lot of things. I think that there's been a lot of propaganda in our media, where, of course, we see cops as good guys. I mean, for those of us who enjoy crime shows, true crime shows, Law and Order, like, and I think we have been conditioned for a long time to think that cops are good guys.
Uh-huh.
And even when they're acting outside the law, they're acting as vigilantes, they're still usually framed as protagonists.
It's almost like a Robin Hood.
Right. Who are doing so to protect us. Right.
Right.
So even their slogan, like, to protect and serve, I think all of that has really been ingrained in us. And we have been taught, like, these are the people you call when you're in trouble. These are the people who are going to help you.
Right.
And it doesn't matter how much anecdotal evidence we have that says otherwise, you know, all of the women who have called police when after they've been raped, like, it doesn't matter how much evidence we have in our lived experience that tells us that that's actually not true, that they're not always going to protect you. I think it's so ingrained in our psyches, or in the psyches of those of us who have had the privilege to be able to see it that way.
Yeah.
Who haven't existed in neighborhoods, communities that have for a long time seen law enforcement as a threat to them.
Right.
You know, so for the rest of us, I think we've been kind of, I mean, and sheltered. I had it both ways because my family, my grandparents did not trust the police at all. They never would have called the police to come to their neighborhood. But on the other hand, my white family members saw it the complete opposite way.
Yeah.
They would call the cops for anything.
It's different lived experiences,
yes.
You know, because, you know, it's the privilege. I know if I were to call a cop, the chances of me being killed at the end of it are very, very slim. That is not something that I've ever had to consider in my life. If I've wanted to call 911 or call the cops on somebody or myself. But I gotta say, I think about it now. Like, I've seen some things that I've thought of as suspicious, different things like that, but I'm like, I'm not gonna call the cops on somebody. Like, I just don't ever want to be that person that's going to fuck something up that badly. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, I think a lot of communities now are figuring out other resources, other people that they can call in situations
yeah.
like that. And it's unfortunate
and it has
that
to be
that's
learned.
Where we're at.
It has to be learned.
Yeah.
Like, we talked about this, I think, a couple weeks ago, where the numbers and the resources have to be learned where you have them on hand. Because, like, there was an incident recently where there was a man that was obviously unwell who was, like, knocking on car windows and trying to open car doors and walking in the street. And it was just one of those things, like, I don't know what to do for this person. So it has to be taught so that we have that ingrained in us of the resources that we can contact that aren't the police that who could potentially hurt this person.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that is a very good point, because we did talk about that, and I still have not done the thing that I said I was going to do, which is to look up what those resources are, because especially if you live in a big city, those resources absolutely exist.
Right.
And you should program them in your phone.
Put them on your fridge.
Yeah. Under something that you can remember. So that when you are in that situation, you can call someone other than the police, because let me tell you, there's a large unhoused population right here near where I live. I would never want to call the police on any of those people.
I feel the same.
At the same time, you want to make sure they're taken care of, and you want to make sure that the people around are safe and taken care of as well.
Exactly.
So you can't do it yourself. You do need assistance, but I personally would try and find assistance that is not the police.
100%. Yeah.
Because I don't trust y'all, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I don't even know. We, like, just very recently, because it was getting so discolored, we still have our Black Lives Matter sign on our window. Mm-hmm. But we had, I think one of them said, end police brutality. And it was just so, like, weathered and wilted and, like, mm-hmm. awful. So we took it down. But before that, whenever there were cops on our street, we always got a lot of stares at our windows and be like,
well,
ha,
ha. I mean, look.
Suck it.
Maybe stop terrorizing people and stop backing up your fellow officers who do terrorize people, because I'm really tired of hearing...
Oh, yeah, for me, I'm like, yeah, I'm watching you. I hope you know I'm watching you right now from my window.
I'm tired of hearing not all cops, okay? Because I'm just like,
ooh.
I understand exactly what you're trying to say. However, the system is fucked. And if your uncle, daddy, whoever, who works in the police department isn't actively doing everything that he can to change the system, to hold the people who need to be held accountable, then I'm lumping him in with everybody else. Okay?
100%. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, thank you. So I do want to say that she Kim Potter did resign. She resigned on Tuesday.
She should have been fucking fired. I'm sorry.
Yes, I agree. And also the chief of police resigned as well. And then she was charged, as you said, with second degree manslaughter.
Boo.
And there are ongoing protests happening in Minneapolis still. So
yeah, it is tense in Minneapolis right now. My heart is honestly breaking with everything that is going on there. It's upsetting. And we're going to talk about another, you know, young boy in a minute. But before we move on to another topic, I wanted to just say for any of our listeners who are actually in Minnesota, you can go to the Brooklyn Center High School at 6500 North Humboldt Avenue in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, and drop off certain items and things like that that they're asking for. And there's actually also a pizza place down the street at 6816 North Humboldt Avenue who have also been accepting donations for Dante Jr. as well as supplies for protesters. And if you're out of state, you can send monetary donations to China and Dante Jr. China is Dante's girlfriend. And you can send donations through Venmo, Cash App, or PayPal, and you can also buy from their Amazon wish list. So I'm going to put all of those details in the show notes, and I'm also going to make them into an Instagram post that'll be with our episode post that we'll put up. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I love that a pizza place down the street is like, yeah, we'll take donations too. Yeah, and like getting stuff for protesters and everything. I think that's fantastic.
I like to try and focus on things like that because it's been really hard. Again, I mean, we opened this episode with me kind of talking about how disheartened I am about this whole situation. It's honestly, it's exhausting. I feel very emotionally exhausted. However, I do constantly try to remind myself that I really believe there are more good people than bad people, and there are more people who want to step in situations like this, in crises of any kind. You know, whenever Hurricane Katrina hit, there were all kinds of neighbors helping neighbors and people flying in to help in situations like that. And I try to remind myself that a lot of those people are out there, and like the people who own that pizza place, like, they saw something and they were like, you know what? We can do something about this, and we can help. And I encourage people to try and keep that perspective even when it's really, really hard.
Yeah. I think finding people...
You don't want to lose your hope or your compassion.
Finding people, even if just on the news through stories that you feel are like-minded, I feel like is always also a good way to make you feel less alone. Because I think in this, when there's so much pain, you know, my mom was talking about texting her siblings when the Derek Chauvin trial started. And my mom was very emotional and very upset. And she sent this long text about asking her family to send prayers to George Floyd's family. And just she was sending this whole thing and she was really just emotional and upset. And her brother was the only one to respond. She has four mm-hmm. siblings. And that was even more heartbreaking to her because she's like, why don't they care? Why can't they even give prayers? Why aren't they responding? You know, and there is...
It's hard.
And she just said, she's like, I'm so glad that I can listen to you and Keegan and know that I'm not crazy. I'm not alone, that I have people out there that like agree with me on this. You know, I just don't feel like I'm sitting alone in my frustration or anything. You know what I mean?
And I also want to say that, like, never feel like you're the weird one for having compassion and empathy.
Definitely.
And caring about people, because I feel like this world and this country a lot of the times makes you feel like they use terms like social justice warrior, snowflake, in a derogatory way.
Yeah.
And it's really like, I'm not going to apologize for the fact that I believe in social justice, that I believe in humanity, that I want to help people.
Right, for being a nice person. If you don't feel that way,
yeah, then maybe the problem is your problem, not my problem.
Exactly.
So, I feel bad for you if you're so jaded that you're to a place where you can't feel empathy for what someone is going through, mm-hmm. regardless what your mom said to her family, regardless of how you feel about the situation, you can say as a human being to another human being, I empathize with what that family is going through because it is horrifying,
yeah,
and terribly sad,
yeah,
and difficult. And like, you can say, I can send a prayer to that family regardless of how you feel.
Exactly. And to me, you know, they the people who didn't respond are allegedly the most religious ones in the family. You know what I mean? It's like, isn't that, like, if we're gonna pull at that thread, isn't that exactly what you're supposed to be there for, to give prayers to those who need it?
So Christ-like.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing that I think was so, like, almost shocking to my mom. Like, her oldest sister used to be a nun.
Yeah.
For God's sake.
Like, yeah, it's frustrating and it's sad.
Yeah, it's seeing changes, or I guess not changes, but seeing realities in your loved ones that is upsetting to you, I think, is also something that never goes away for people. As well.
Of course.
Being let down.
I feel that. And, you know, I felt it in my own life. So
Yeah.
Completely understand.
Yeah, it's hard.
I do want to talk about this. I know it's on your list as well. Uh-huh. Just really quickly. I don't want to linger on it too long.
Or else I'm going to start crying immediately.
This one is hard. I didn't watch the video.
Don't watch the video, Keegan.
For Dante, and I won't watch the video for this either, even though it is making its rounds. Again, I say it every time. I'm going to say it again. Don't feel like you have to watch these videos, especially if you are members of these communities, because it is traumatizing to see people who look like you, people who look like your family members, or even people who look like your friends.
Yeah.
In situations like this, and this one particularly is a child. So yeah, that is triggering on so many levels.
I gotta say, I really believe that if you are a white person, that you do have an obligation to witness some of these things. That's sure. just my opinion. I don't sure. think, I'm not gonna pressure anybody to do something that they're not comfortable with. But I think that if you are trying to be an ally and you want to understand what's going on, I think that you do have an obligation to not just read about it, but to witness it. Like, I don't know mm-hmm. why, but to me, I feel like that is something where if I want to feel like I'm giving enough respect to the person who lost their life, I feel like I should be able to get through that. But I don't think that... I agree with you in saying that people of color should not have to watch someone that resembles their loved ones or themselves have to go through something like that. But I do believe that for me, being someone who wants to be a white ally, I feel like I do have an obligation to watch those videos, to have education and to have more empathy.
So I understand that. I understand that perspective.
Yeah, I have watched both of them. But I will always encourage somebody that has a traumatic response to violence to not watch it because it is hard.
I will give a specific trigger warning to this one though, because it is a 13-year-old child.
Yes.
Which this stuff is difficult no matter who it is. You know, it's watching somebody die.
Yeah.
It's not, it's not something that I ever wanted to do. I don't want to ever witness somebody die.
No, if I'm not watching a Hollywood action movie, I don't want to see death.
Right. I don't want to see somebody lose their life. So, but I also completely understand what you're saying, Madigan. And I do think that, unfortunately, for some people, that's what broke open the civil rights movement, was seeing just this brutality.
Well, yeah, and that's what
helps TV screens
and the Vietnam War. Like, I just think mm-hmm. that if you continue to be sheltered about stuff and don't watch those videos, then you're not going to have the fire and the passion and the understanding to want to make any change. I just think it's important. But again, right. if you're going to be like, if there is like trauma involving violence or anything like that, I'm also not saying that I'm going to force you to watch these things. I'm just saying, in my opinion, I think it's an obligation. Just me.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, so in Chicago, in the Little Village neighborhood, police basically were in pursuit of a man who was later identified as Ruben Roman.
Yeah.
So they were running after him, and then at some point, they end up coming across 13-year-old Adam Toledo. in the video, and he, like, basically, I think he comes out from behind a wooden fence, and they tell him to stop, and they're yelling at this kid. They're saying, "Please, please stop, you know, fucking stop now." So he turns around and they say, "Show me your hands." So he turns to show them his hands, both of which are empty. As you can see in the video, I have seen stills. I have not watched the video, like I said, but his hands are empty. They're very clearly empty from what I can see. And the next second, the officer says, "Drop it." And then immediately, right after he says, "Drop it," doesn't even give, if he had had a weapon, he didn't give him an opportunity to put it down.
No. And I've got to say, having watched the video, this happens so fast. So fast. Like, there is no time for a reaction. It is completely just, I mean, it's only reaction from the officers. You know what I mean? There's no time for Adam to respond in any sort of way. I have, and I'm, again, none of, I don't know any of this. I've read different articles, one of which speculated that you can see him tossing something behind the fence at some point. So they, I did read that he had a pistol, but that he wasn't, like, using it, and he wasn't, like, pointing it at anybody. He was just trying to get rid of it so that he wouldn't get in trouble to have it. It's kind of what it sounds like. So
okay.
I'm not trying to speculate any part of the story. I didn't see that in the video that I saw, but it was a shaky body cam footage thing. So I don't know if that's information that's going to come out. But if that is the case, it sounds like it wasn't like he was using it and shooting it.
Well,
it was just, like, still, on his person.
In the still I saw,
When his hands are up, he has nothing.
He has nothing in his hands, and his hands are up. So it doesn't really matter. Like, even if he
had
a gun.
He has nothing to drop.
Right. Even if he had a gun, listen, which I understand makes it a far more volatile situation. If he had a gun in his hands when he put his hands up. He didn't.
Yes.
But even if he had, you can't tell him to drop something and then immediately open fire without giving him the opportunity to drop it, because he wasn't pointing that gun. Bare minimum, he wasn't pointing anything at you.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is that even if there was a gun involved somewhere in the conversation, it was not involved at the time that the police asked him to raise his hands up, and he's a 13-year-old boy.
And that's exactly right.
You should not immediately shoot. And
a 13-year-old child, he looks like a child.
Yeah, and that's what I don't understand. And I think that there's race involved in the initial police report listing him as 18 to 25. I don't know.
Okay.
I just think that, because I know that historically there tends to be something where men of color are aged a bit.
They're aged and they're deemed to be more threatening.
Right.
Yes.
So that was originally on the police report. They said it was a man between the ages probably of 18 to 25. And it was later that they discovered that it was Adam Toledo, who was only 13 years old.
Yeah. And he doesn't look, he's tall.
He looks like a baby.
I'll say that.
But
he's tall, but he looks like a child.
He looks like an eighth grader.
Like a man in any way.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then the guy immediately, he knew he fucked up. He walked over and basically said, "Are you okay?"
Yeah. And then he starts saying, "Stay with me, stay with me." They start doing chest compressions once they realize that they've lost his heartbeat. And then once they realize that Adam was gone, the officer gets up and just starts pacing. It's so disgusting. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because he knew he fucked up. He starts crying.
He knew he fucked up.
Yeah, he starts crying.
I hope you cry forever and feel like shit, you asshole.
Yeah, you took someone's baby from them. A 13-year-old is a baby.
Yeah.
Like, seriously. And, like, you know, he walked away. And then when he was filing his report later, he basically said that he feared for his life. That was what he said.
Defense of self. Here it is. It says that in the police report, it said that Adam was armed with a semi-automatic pistol that was, quote, displayed, not used. So they're saying that because there is a moment where Adam starts to run from the cops. So I don't know if people are fabricating that he has tossed something. I don't know if that is, you know, I don't know if that was a falsified police report. I don't know if that's something that actually happened.
Even if it happened at 13, I would have run from the cops too.
And tossed the gun as I was running. Like, if I had in possession, for whatever reason, he was in possession of a gun, if he was, and a cop was coming after me, I'd want to get the fuck rid of that gun too and get out of there. Like, he's responding like a 13-year-old boy would at the any scared 13-year-old boy would.
You know, okay, yeah. This is just what I want to say about this entire situation. This is what I want to say about everything that has happened since the beginning of time, but particularly since we have been doing this segment on this podcast, because basically since we started this podcast, we have had semi-frequent conversations like this. The cops should not be allowed to have fucking guns at this point. You have shown us time and time again that you are not trained well enough to have one. And we need to take your toy away now. That's where we're at, is because just like you cannot continuously make mistakes that cost people their lives and their loved ones. You cannot continuously be allowed to do that and get to hold on to your guns. Like, I'm sorry. I don't know what else you want us to do at this point. Like, what do you want us to do? Because
I agree.
This isn't acceptable. Like, it's not acceptable. So we need to make, something has to change. And something has to change.
And it's not like there aren't other options that would work. There are other countries that run differently that are effective. You know, I just think that there is such, I mean, we both, you know, have listened to the Behind the Bastards episodes of the history of policing. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing a lot of reading about, you know, Minnesota history of policing in particular this week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is so, this goes so far back.
Right.
That I think that there is a lot like, you know, people don't, you know, from that love the NRA don't want their guns taken away. It's that same thing. There's something so ingrained in American history of how policing looks that I think that that is something that it's the same reason why defund the police scares people. The idea of American cops not having guns for some reason scares Americans more than comforts them in general. And I'm talking white America here, but you know,
yeah. Like, and I agree. I understand that, but like something's got to give. You can't keep.
No, I completely agree with you, but right, I'm just saying that's good. But I think that because we have this history of believing that a cop is a certain way, that it's going to take a lot to convince a large amount of people to agree with that. Unfortunately, I'm all for it. Well, let's take all the guns.
Here's the thing. If you don't want to agree that that's the action that needs to be taken, then what are you willing to bend on?
Uh-huh.
Because they, if you want them to keep their guns, then something else has to change. They have to get better training. There has to be better psychological exams. There has to be something that prevents this from happening, because we cannot continually say, I thought my life was in danger when it wasn't.
I thought I had a taser and it was actually a handgun. And it wasn't.
Like, we can't, yourself, we Kim can't Potter. Keep doing that. We can't keep having Tamir Rice situations where it's a 12-year-old with a BB gun. Like, or an airsoft gun. Like, we can't, okay?
We cannot.
Like, so something has to change, all right? Because you having whatever 50 hours, it's not 50 hours, but you having a limited number of hours of training and then being given a weapon and power over the everyday civilian is not working, okay?
Yeah.
So something's got to change, man. And I don't know what else we can do. I am tired. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And you know what? And I don't have much trust in Biden. He's still letting, what did he do? He like signed something that said that it's okay for the border wall to continue to be built in certain areas.
I don't know.
He still is letting kids stay in cages. I just, fuck you, Biden. I'm mad at Biden right now. Because I can't even be like,
we knew we would be.
Oh,
I know.
I'm not surprised. I'm just frustrated that I'm already this mad at him already. You know, it's like, I want to be able to call on my government to be able to be like, hey, do you see this problem? Let's do something about it. But unfortunately, I still don't really have a whole lot of faith.
Well, you know, you got shoot him in the leg, Biden, which was basically what his platform that he was running on during the campaign was basically like, why do we gotta shoot him where it's gonna kill him? Like, can't you just shoot him in the leg? And it's like, how about we shoot them
Nowhere.
Like, what are you talking about?
Nowhere. Let's not shoot. I don't like guns. Actually, okay, so this is a little bit of a lighthearted anecdote. I was looking through old home movies of myself the other day, and I never even had, like, Nerf guns growing up. I didn't have a lot of water guns. Like, I didn't like guns. I didn't play with guns. That was not my jam. So I had, like, a family reunion at my cabin, and I'm trying to get this, like, big water gun to work, and I'm, like, pumping it, and I just can't quite get it, and you hear my mom in this Minnesota accent, oh, yeah, Maddie's just not used to guns, and I just kind of hand it to my grandma, like, I can't work the water gun, and just walk away.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, Maddie's not used to guns.
You good sweetheart.
The same is still true today. I have been within feet of a gun. I've never touched one. They scare me. I don't want to touch one ever.
I've shot guns. Look, I've shot guns, and I've had a good time shooting guns. But it's
just not for me.
That doesn't mean I think everybody should own a gun.
No,
that doesn't mean I think everybody should be using a gun. Like,
well, and I kind of feel the opposite. Like, just because I'm super scared of it, like, I'm not saying that everybody should be scared of it. I just have an extreme fear of guns. I am also a very clumsy person. I am not the most graceful person in the world. I should not be given a gun. I know that.
And I hear that as well.
Don't give me a gun.
Oh, man. Well, listen, we know that this... Sometimes I hesitate to even want to talk about these things. We have to because this is what's in the news right now.
I was going
to
say, it's kind of our job. We have to.
That's dominating the news, and we have to talk about it. But I sometimes don't even want to because I'm just like... What else? How many times can we have the same conversation?
I know.
Like that's seriously how it feels to me a lot of the time, where I'm just like, how many times are we going to have this exact conversation? How many different ways can we express
exactly
the same sentiment? And so write in and let us know your thoughts on this. Do you like it when we have these conversations? Do you want us? Does it help you process?
Yeah.
For us to be talking about this, we will always, of course, bring it up.
Totally,
like, we have to always bring it up. But just let us know. I want to hear from you because it's such a difficult thing to go through and to also feel like you can't escape from it anywhere.
Yeah, and
you shouldn't be escaping from it. You should be like living it and experiencing
exactly
it, right? Like,
and I think
we need to be. But
and I think for us as the people who are speaking on it, it feels repetitive to us, you know? And I think that that's what gets frustrating, is just constantly having the same conversations and not having any change. And I mentioned that a few weeks ago with talking about mass shootings as well, where, you know, it's just frustrating with, having to constantly be telling these stories week after week after week after week and not being able to add anything to the conversation, just having to continually talk about how horrible and awful these things are and, you know, try to find the good, like the people doing good.
Right.
But it's just it really is. It's a very defeating feeling to knowing that every week we're reporting on things that are so similar and so heartbreaking that it's almost hard to put the same emphasis and heart.
Well,
it's
hard too, because it just feels like, I mean,
what can I say now that I haven't already said a million
times? Right. And
times?
And it's also, you know, there was also a school shooting this week.
There was
and
two
I
of them, wasn't there?
Yes, there were two. There were two
at like the same time.
Yeah. One in Texas and one in California. Ugh. And I posted on my wall, it was basically like, we sorry to interrupt the interrupting of a police shooting trial with another police shooting with a school shooting.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just like, this is America. This is constant. It is constant. It is all the time. And it's exhausting.
It's hard.
There's no other word.
Yeah. If you're putting energy into it, it is absolutely heartbreaking and exhausting. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Everybody, please.
Well, anyway.
And also feel free, you know, I always love hearing your thoughts, your opinions, you expressing yourselves about all of these situations as well. So write into us and let us know your thoughts on us discussing these topics, but also if there's anything that you want to add to the conversation. So it isn't just Keegan and I expressing our opinions. I would be more than happy to share those on the mini episode. So if you would like to write into us, please do so at our email, which is neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. You can also direct message us and follow us on our Instagram at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can go to the group page and chat with the other listeners, post different feminist things that you find online, throw them up there, get some responses to that. You can also go to our Facebook business page and leave a review there if you haven't. And if you haven't left us a review on Apple Podcasts, we appreciate it so much when you do. And you will be featured on our Instagram for Reviews Day Tuesday. And speaking of reviews, I have to say to you now before I forget, the My Worst Date t-shirt of your horrible review is legitimately the best.
Thank you so much.
I want a mug that says that, and I want a review that is as bad and as catchy as that, so we can copy it. Because that is,
let me tell you,
gold. It is so gold.
We have gotten two bad reviews semi-recently, one-star reviews, which is fine with me. It doesn't bother me at all. Like, you know, not every podcast is for everybody.
Exactly, but yeah.
Both of them were from men.
Of course they were
super condescending. One of them, they called us shrill, which I was just like, that's the most
I saw your story unoriginal. Posted that. You're like, Mom, I made it.
Yes, a man called me shrill. Yeah, this one was basically saying that we were superficial and it was junk food for the brain. And so we made merch.
What is wrong with that?
Exactly. That's how we feel.
Promotional.
So we were like,
tool.
Put it on a t-shirt. So we're feeling good about it. And so speaking of that, I know we need to wrap this up. But speaking of that, we are working on merch. We're getting that out soon. If you have any recommendations, also feel free to email us about that. We would love to hear from you.
Yes. All right, everybody. Well, finally, that is all we have for you today. With all of that being said, we encourage you
to rage on.
Bye-bye.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration, I'll give myself a pat on the back for that, as well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please, join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.